This is Lachlan Rouston.
This is Ralph Friedman. And you're listening to the fittest podcast in Australia,
The Mind Muscle Project. All right, Project, welcome back to the after show. I have a question for you, Ralph. Let's kick things off. How much money do you think was paid out this year to one of the top Call of Duty, like, world champion teams, like, in the final?
To the team or to one person?
Because, like, really what I'm getting at here is a broader question of how are we defining sport?
Yeah.
Because...
But, sorry, is this money to one person or to a whole team?
It's a team of four people.
Okay. So, they're splitting it four ways.
Yeah.
Is this like prize money? Like, if you win the...
Exactly. Okay. Just think of it like tournament first prize, yep. First
so
place
So, not like
prize.
Sponsorships, total value.
No. Which is more, always more, right?
Yeah. Okay. Well, my numbers have been inflated because you told me that that fighter at your brother's camp got $500,000 for an Instagram post.
Yeah.
But I'm going to say four people maybe getting $1 million each, so $4 million.
Yeah, it's pretty close. It's like 2.something million
US?
Pounds.
Pounds.
Okay. Euros, sorry.
Yeah, so about
it's almost
million.
Double. Yeah. That's like one of the top prizes. But do you think, and this is like, I would say before esports, the closest thing to this, I guess, kind of like a borderline, was chess, and was in some ways, I guess, but
fuck,
less blurred lines.
These games are so much more fun than chess.
Yeah. Oh F1. Because actually, I guess some people, some purists, sport purists that watch baseball, watch basketball, watch soccer, watch rugby, they would say, oh, F1's not really a sport, right? People that don't know what they don't know. I've F1, I think, without a doubt, hands down, is a sport. Like, the guys come out of those races completely drenched in sweat. Like,
yeah,
they're such physical things.
I also think this, the risking of your life adds to it as well. Because it's still a physical sport if you walk away dead or without a leg.
350 k's an hour or whatever they go down the straights. So, do you think that esports is actual sport? Like, how do you define sport? I think that's a real
question. I think it's definitely actual sport. It's just, I think probably more, it's like whether it's the sport we want everybody playing. I think people more get scared about. So it's like, it is a sport.
I mean, but you could say that about any sport.
Yeah, but I guess, you know, people, I think more often people are like, that's not a sport. And what they really mean is they're like, okay, it's obviously a sport. It's just not a super physical sport.
Yeah.
But I think it is, you know, potentially can very easily become more physical because there's like, you know, physical games now. With the VR stuff where like it still is games and you're moving around. Just
like Wii Tennis.
Yes, it's getting more physical.
Yeah.
Or it might get more physical. I think people are often like, oh, it's not a sport because what they're trying to say is, you know, like, I don't think this is great if everyone's playing these sort of sports instead of like regular sports that we're used to and we have like a generation of fat kids growing up and they're like, the new LeBron is like obese.
Yeah.
And everyone's, you know, looking up and all the Nike commercials are just him sitting at home and his parents play video games.
Yeah. Well, I don't think that would ever happen, but you know, it is interesting to see now how these kids are navigating being famous. Because I would say the one thing about this sport that makes it, I guess, very new age, but also I see some issues with it going forward, is that these kids that are so good at this sport, they don't have to interact with people face to face. So it'd be like
If you're on a team,
like you can just train together online.
Yeah, right.
You don't have to like. No, yeah, I mean, obviously, when you go to a tournament, you meet up or whatever. But you don't, for the vast majority of the year, you don't really have to. I know some of them now, they all like live in the same house and stuff like that. But there's not a lot of reason for them to do that, especially at the moment. So you spend pretty much your entire life just on a screen, you know? And I think people now know the negative effects of doing that on Zoom. Like Zoom, I think it's pretty fair to say at this point, anyone that's working from home, like 100%, wants to have some interaction. Like, because we're listening to that podcast where they're talking about the Sydney CBD returning and what's going to happen to office space in the future, to commercial spaces. And people were saying that the balance between more like 4 days at home, 3 or 4 days at home, and then 2 or 3 days in the office. The reason they go into the office is to be social. That's really the main reason. It's not really to be productive anymore. It's like to connect with your team and to build culture. And that's obviously going to impact how offices are used in the future. But I definitely think that you can't, I think people realizing now, you just can't sit at home all day and just use Zoom. No. Like, you do need a social aspect to it.
And I think what's even worse is, you know, if you have your work, which is like Zoom and heaps of screens, right? And then your social time, like say your hobby is games.
Yeah, video games.
Yeah. I'm not saying video games are bad, but I just think that is when you get the serious, like when you're like, your switch off time is screens.
Yeah.
Whatever, Netflix and games. And then your work time is screens as well. It's just like, it can't be everything.
Yeah. Well, that's why I'm using like the blue light glasses now. Just because I know if you use too many screens, it's just... it's bad for your health.
Yeah, even no matter how many glasses you wear, even if it's good for your eyes, still there is a mental fatigue.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
It's why I think like the Peloton thing is just not that exciting to me.
Yes.
You know, sitting at home on a bike, I like a bike at home, but just like staring at a screen, I don't know, is that like the best way to start your day? You're about to go off to the office, you're like, dude, the best way is a Peloton. I don't know, like sitting in front of a screen, riding a bike before you go to work and sit in front of a screen again for 9 hours. Is that like such a good advancement? Is that the best way to start your day?
Yeah. It's funny you mentioning like a Peloton. Did you see, because our Prime Minister, he's in isolation for you in America.
Oh, I see. I didn't see that.
The President is called the Prime Minister over here. Different system. But he's in isolation because he went to Japan. So he's like got a quarantine for 2 weeks or whatever. But anyway, there's a photo of him and he's on the bike. He's on like a Peloton bike.
On a Peloton.
Well, it's not a Peloton, but it's like an exercise bike. Right. It looks like a Peloton.
Yeah. He could do with a bit of exercise.
No, and then I thought to myself, he doesn't look like he's exercised a day in his life, right?
Yeah.
It's just a rolling ball of dough. I think that...
It looks like maybe he like was a bit of a footy player when he was younger, but it's been like 25 years.
No, I just reckon... I only just posed for Instagram. I don't think he's legitimately ever fucking cycled on a bike before. I'm like, come on, bro. Who are you fooling here? Like, skip the bike, bro.
You know, it's sad man, when the Prime Minister's getting into the fitness inspiration post.
I think it's just not good that the leader of the country is just severely overweight.
Yeah, 100%.
It's just a bad look.
The best thing was when we had Tony Abbott, and he was famous overseas because he had like the budgie smugglers. He had like a six-pack. Obama was the same.
Yeah.
Obama worked out every single morning. I think he had like a personal trainer that was at, like... It was like... I think he didn't get up early because, you know, he'd have like crazy nights and stuff. But it was like the first thing, no matter what time he got up, PT would just get him up, go training, right?
I mean, it is an easy criticism of our Prime Minister and of Donald Trump, was that they're just so overweight and unhealthy. It's like just a natural level of respect that you lose for someone that doesn't take care of themselves properly. I'm sorry, but getting on a bike for 20 minutes a day is not looking after yourself. That's just fucking lazy. That's just trying to tick the exercise box, but then being, oh, yeah, no, I exercise today. Let me have 15 beers at lunch. That's what that is.
Yeah, I mean, people expect that sort of like congruency in other areas. So, like, say when Donald Trump didn't pay much tax, they're like, oh, you know, whatever, maybe he did it legally, but, you know, you should be, like, patriotic and paying your taxes.
Right.
And not be, like, scared of paying your taxes. It's the same thing.
Mm.
If you're like, oh, I'm bringing in, like, health reforms, like, yeah, but look after your own health.
Yeah. Well, it's like Boris, right? He's got the virus, got really sick, and then started campaigning for exercising, but then he chose to ride on a bike 10 minutes a day.
Yeah.
It's like the worst form. Do some squats with some weights. You get way more benefits.
And the truth is that I guess most of the population is overweight, so most people don't care. But if most of the population cared for even just a little bit that you were in shape, they would all be in shape.
Yeah.
Because you have to be. It's like, you know, it's a popularity contest.
Yeah.
In the same way, you know, in America, whatever, they're all Christian. Because it's just like, you kind of have to because most people there are Christian.
Yeah.
It would be the same. If we were here and it was like, you know, we don't really want like an out of shape prime minister, they would just get in shape.
Yeah.
And it would be done.
Especially in Australia.
But I think it's mostly because most people are not in shape and they like to have a leader that doesn't make them feel bad.
Yeah, it's
you know, a leader that's like, oh, what do you do? Oh, got up at 4 a.m., 100 push-ups, 100 sit-ups. Yeah. Like, dude, this guy's like, I can't relate.
Yeah.
You know, but someone like a bit overweight, it's like, oh, you know, I like a cheeky beer on a Friday. Like, that's someone that you can relate to, doesn't make you feel bad about yourself, doesn't make you feel like, you know, that's what I should be doing.
That's Bob Hawke, bro. That's why I love him.
People can get around it.
Smash that beer. Remember the guy, you know
Bob Hawke? Yeah, 100%. Yeah. They have a beer named after him now.
Yeah, Hawke's Brewing. Yeah. No, it's a whole brewing company.
Yeah.
So anyway, it's just...
That's the legacy he wanted.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just that you do have to be, I think, relatable in many ways. But anyway, it's another thing. So this vaccine, right? This AstraZeneca vaccine, there's another one from Pfizer, right? So there's two. Okay, what is the difference between them?
Well, the AstraZeneca, I think, is just more relevant because Australia has 30 million.
Units.
Yeah, like we're guaranteed.
Already.
But it's like, whatever, when they roll it out, we're guaranteed 30 million units.
But has it been approved? Like, did it do the massive trial? Like,
yeah, exactly. Pfizer, it's like one? It's okay, like 70. It was 70% success rate in the UK, and then but then they tweaked it, and it was like they give you half a dose and then a full dose like half an hour later or something, like a different way of giving it to you, and it got up to a 90%.
That okay, so you know the Pfizer one got 90% out of 40,000. Okay,
but I'm saying this one was 70%.
How many people did they test?
Fuck, I'm not sure exactly. I've got it here. They did it in the UK though, so it's like a legit trial.
They fucking need it over there.
It wasn't
right
like oh, it was some Serbia one. No one knows the people.
Yeah, yeah.
Legit trial, and yeah, it was 70%, and then they found a way to kind of give you like it's kind of like a double hit. I could have told you that. Give them a double dose.
Always double dose.
And it was up to 90%. So I think it's just as promising as the US one, except this is our one. So this is the Aussie.
Oh, this company's Australian.
No, so it's from the UK, but it's the one we're banking on.
Yeah, okay.
So we've purchased the 30 million units. Yeah. So that's the shit that's going in your arm.
So when, how early will we get it? I was assuming.
Man, they're hoping to start doing it after Christmas.
Okay.
This year.
Yeah, because the Pfizer one said it could make Australian shores by March, the first people.
Right, yeah. It won't get there straight away, but they want to start. We're not the first in line, right?
Yeah.
But we are like one of the earlier ones in line. And then the head of Qantas already came out and he said, like, if you want to step on a plane next year, you have to have the vaccine. It's like like they're checking. I don't know how they check for it, but I guess it's like you get like a passport stamp. Yep. So it's like you got a vaccine, like now you're free to travel.
It's like a bio passport.
Yeah, so but he was like, and I think the other airlines were like, same shit, like you're not getting on a plane unless you have this.
Interesting. Okay, so there's always this dilemma, and they talk about it sometimes, which is the first mover, right? The first mover dilemma with anything, right? It'd just be like with CrossFit, right? The first people that tried CrossFit, you know, it was madness, right? People walked in the gym, people flying around on these fucking straps with wooden rings attached to it.
They're all gone now.
Barbells dropping them, and it's like, most of the people go, fuck, I'm not going to do that. I'll let some weird, crazy, you know, ex-special forces do that and run around like crazy with their shirts off. And it took a few years of those sort of people, the first movers, to do it before the mainstream caught on. Obviously, the same logic still applies here. Where do you think you fit in the curve? Do you think you fit early adopters? Do you think mainstream?
Yeah, I mean, I think the bad part is that I won't be one of the first ones because I'm not like a high risk person. Like, I'm sure it'll go to the medical staff and
oldies. Put that availability of it aside. Put the practicality of that
aside.
Yeah,
no way I'd want to be one of the first people to get it.
Okay.
Sounds like a bad idea. But I think regardless, you're going
to
be.
But someone has to be.
Yeah, it just doesn't have to be me.
Yeah, no, I know.
Someone has to be, I guess. Yeah. But I mean, I guess that's. Yeah, fuck. Someone has to be. I mean, people already signed up to the trials, right? People doing trials before they even know if it is safe.
Yeah. They've tested 40,000 people, so.
Yes, I mean, that's kind of done. But I guess it's one of those ones that everybody, if you were like worried about the long-term consequences or whatever of it, you basically have to get it regardless. There's no time to wait for the long-term consequences. Like, you haven't got time.
I can't wait 20 years. Yeah.
No, I can't. Or even 18 months.
Yeah.
If I want to travel, I'm just going to have to get it.
Yeah. 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 And the MMP show needs to hit the road again. We're itching. Yeah. So,
it's promising for us to leave 2021.
Yeah, I mean, there's some places you would go, some places you wouldn't go. But the fear is that you go somewhere and then they end up in like some sort of lockdown or some sort of protest. But I guess you kind of know ahead of time if the country's stable or unstable. But you know, if you traveled to the UK when the cases were down in April or whatever, when they came out of their first lockdown.
Until there's a vaccine, you're rolling the dice.
Yeah, you would have thought, it's all good. We're unlocking. It's looking good. I'll quickly travel over there. And then, you know, explosion, 20,000 cases.
That was that stat we had. We had 700. They had 720 on the same day.
Yeah, you told me.
In June. And then it was like 2 months later, they had 20,000. We had 12.
There's just so much that goes into it, though. It's just so hard to know. But anyway, on the same topic, I was reading one of my mates. He sent me a bunch of different... So obviously a lot of these massive companies at the moment, they're gathering a lot of data about the future of food and food supply and how COVID has affected it and farming practices. Because obviously when the global economy shut down, a lot of the logistics of moving food between countries and farming and stuff, kind of a lot of, you know, shit hit the fan basically. And so some countries weren't able to get food properly. But one of the consumer trends that I think it was Deloitte, they've started doing the research on it. They said that people have now, they've been surveying thousands of people and consumer behavior. And now people are starting to care more about the origins of their food sources because it's something like 95% of the last pandemic diseases that have broke out have come from an animal source, or 70%. Right? It's really high. And so people are now like showing more concern about where their food comes from. Where does this cow come from? Or where does this... you know, pig come from or whatever, what is the safety around that? Because, you know, a lot of farms are in China as well, so people are kind of feeling a bit sketch about this stuff. But what's been interesting is that it seems like now more people, from the surveys, more people are going to choose a more sustainable, not only environmentally, because obviously climate change has become, I guess, more on the forefront just because it was a discussion in the US election and it was, you know, people just had more time to research more stuff, right? Because we're at home more. And yeah, as David Attenborough's documentary came out, people are going more, they're ready to eat less meat, which I don't know if I agree with necessarily. So they're going more plant-based. And then from the animal sources, when they are choosing to eat, they're becoming more conscious of the source of that animal product. What do you think of that? Good thing or bad thing long term?
You know, I'll throw one back. So if you think about like Woolworths and Coles, right? If you're in America, it's like the supermarkets. And right now, if you get like a, say you buy some sort of like superannuation company, they're like, oh, we only invest in like ethical good companies.
Yeah.
That includes like Woolworths and Coles.
Okay.
As one of those companies.
Okay.
But the quality of the meat there is horrific. Like they get the worst possible meat. They get like the ultimate factory farmed.
Cheapest possible
like
meat.
Like this studio would host about 100 pigs.
Like it's stacked just, on stack on
like,
stack.
They're like, they're the most disgusting of any of the food suppliers. Yeah, yeah. So I don't really know how they fall into that category. And I think people are starting to wake up to that.
Yeah.
That just like the, you know, like, oh, like the fun, like cool supermarket that is like generally like good for you. It's like, yeah, the meat's not good. It's come from the worst possible place. That's why the prices are low.
Yeah. It's like I was reading a sign the other day because for those of you international listeners who don't know, Australia had a big issue with our banks a few years ago in terms of where they were using, where they were sourcing their money basically. So some of it was like funding like bioterrorism and shit like that and coal mining and just some really bad stuff. And anyway, there's a huge investigation. A lot of stuff unraveled. But anyway, there's been a strong marketing campaign from an independent bank called the Australian Bank, Australia Bank or whatever. And they're just basically just having a dig at the major four banks in Australia. And one of the campaigns I saw the other day, which was really good, was it was something to the effect of, is the bank account your money is sitting in funding the climate disaster? And it does really make you think. It's pretty easy to move your money between, like it's relatively easy to move your money between banks. Like they'll try and make it hard for you, but at the end of the day, it's a pretty easy process and it could actually make a huge difference. Like imagine if you moved, I don't know, $1 billion out of one bank that's funding coal mining and you put it into a bank that's funding green energy. Like they have so much more, because that's what's going to make a change. Because you know how we talked about, oh, what can you actually do as an individual? That sort of stuff, like moving your money, I think that is one of the biggest impacts that you could make, like giving your money to a bank that can actually spend it on green energy. So much better.
We've got a guy at the gym who's launching a superannuation company. That's exactly what he wants to do. It's like, so most people's superannuation, which is like, so your retirement fund, if you're in the States, it just, goes...
401k?
I think so. I don't know exactly how they work away, but here, you know, you hand your money over, you pay a small management fee, and they just invest it, whatever. And you basically have no idea where they invest it.
Yeah.
Most of it is in, stuff that's horrific for the environment.
Yeah.
And this would be like a perfect example where you can just move your superannuation, which is tons of money. That is most of your money.
Yeah.
Like a lot of people have money in the bank, but most people owe the money bank.
Yeah.
Whereas your superannuation is like, you know, for people in Australia, you have to put money into it. So, you know, regular people can have 400,000, 500,000, people that don't have much money in their superannuation account when they get older.
Yeah.
If they move that to like a clean, or like good for the environment or good for people's health superannuation fund, I think that can make a massive difference.
Yeah, I think so. I think it make a huge difference.
It's like no extra effort, you know, which is good because, you know, one of the biggest holdups with like trying to, you know, care about where your food comes from is like someone sent me this week, it's like regenerative farming, right? This one that you can order online in Sydney.
Oh, you can order food from the regenerative.
Yes, you can. And I'm like, oh, it looks pretty cool. I haven't tried it. But when I look at like the pricing, I'm like, most people are not going to do this.
It's so expensive.
It's just really expensive. Yeah, yeah. You know, it's like really expensive.
It's a premium.
It's a serious premium. Yeah. And like, I haven't tried, if the taste is really good, it could be worth it. But I'm like, oh, this is cool. But this is just like for rich people. So this is not like a long-term solution. You know, you need to hit the masses.
Yeah.
And like this pricing is not hitting the masses.
But that's how that stuff usually works, right? It's like Uber. You know, before Uber, only rich people had private drivers to drive them around in like nice cars, right? Now everyone can get access to it. So it will, I think if it starts there, I feel like at some point it could make its way down. So that would be great. Well, you know, it was interesting because in that same research papers that I was reading, one of the other statistics that came up, which I thought was interesting. I didn't seem true to me, but I guess they've done more research on it than I have. But their data is showing that the generation, Generation Z, is that the generation younger than us? What are we?
Yeah, I think that's correct.
Yeah, Generation Z, they're actually eating less candy and drinking less soda, which I sort of find hard to believe, but apparently they are. But that when they are choosing to, because I mean, you know, survey's a survey, right? Who's answering these surveys? Maybe the kids are drinking so much soda and chocolate don't have time to answer surveys.
Because cracked off their hand on sugar.
They got so many calories to get through. But they were saying that from these generations, they still are as equally interested in these foods, but they care more about eating higher quality foods. Like high quality, they want a more premium boutique chocolate rather than just the cheap shitty chocolate. Like they want to make a choice of like, oh, give me the vegan Lindt, you know, extra Swiss,
double Swiss.
Yeah, I mean like that. But they'd rather eat less and they'd rather eat better.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I don't know. Maybe our generation thrashed processed food to death, and the next generation's like, can't eat that much Cadbury, but like I want the really good stuff. Maybe. Man,
I think so. Like when I always think back to like what I ate when I was young, and I always think I'm like, how do like. If you're 10 years old, right, how does like the tuck shop at your school let you have the worst possible food?
Yeah.
Like the foods are not like, we would spend nearly every lunchtime just like, how can we gather up $3 to buy ice cream? That was like every lunchtime. Oh, you just like walk around, ask people for dollar coins, try and like play a game to win a dollar coin, just like search for dollar coins.
Yeah.
Like where can you just get enough money to put some horrific food into my body?
Stop begging.
And the, you know, and it's like teachers, like there's meant to be adults running this facility for children.
Yeah.
I don't know, the shit shouldn't even be there.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. But I did a talk at like a corporate, like, you know, the corporate group on, I think it was Thursday last week. Anyway, so I was telling them at the start of the talk, we had about 2 hours, that I think what you learn from experience of being in this industry for a long time is that, you know, when I first started, when it came to nutrition, there's some very humbling moments when you're learning about nutrition that honestly make you feel fairly hopeless. And I think it's, in some ways, it's a blessing for the newer generations coming through. There is so much good content out there for helping people. But then I realized as the general consumer, you actually still are just as lost as I was when I first started looking for nutrition information. Because it's taken a decade of experience to find out, oh, okay, like Lane Norton's really good or James Smith is really good, right? To find these people and to know that this is good information. Because what I realize is the average consumer doesn't know who's better. You know, the vegan, you know, carnivore advocate or, you know, the Lane Norton, the science-based guy. You can't actually weigh those up evenly. To you, the information is just the information. You can't actually, it takes experience, it takes time, it takes practice to figure out what is actually relevant and who's actually truthful. And so when I was in that talk, the first thing I said to them, I go, the best part about doing this for me is it's a reminder of exactly, it helps me keep my finger on the pulse of what is still relevant to the mainstream. Because you guys listening now, you're a more educated audience. So when you guys ask questions, sometimes it comes through, it makes me think that the mainstream is still thinking about some more complex stuff. And then we've moved on beyond food timing. We've moved beyond light milk or full cream milk. We've moved beyond you know, white rice or brown rice. But what's refreshing is when I ask them, I go, okay, everyone gets two or three burning questions that they want. I'll answer them at the end. And I started writing them up. It's funny because it's all still the same stuff that we were at 10 years ago. It's the same questions. And I was like, okay, the general population still has not moved on. They said, probably the only difference now is that they're fasting more in the morning. That's probably it. Probably, oh yeah, bro, I'm doing IMF. Yeah. I'm like, okay, cool.
Skipping. I always am reminded it's so popular.
So popular. Fasting has got to be the most popular. Oh my God. And what's interesting is because they still believe there's some kind of special magic to fasting. You know, they think that there's some magic fat lossing. But I basically summed up the whole talk in just the pyramid of importance. And so all I did was explain the pyramid of importance, right? So obviously energy balance at the bottom. I actually like after that, I like to put in food tolerance because I think that's a really important thing, because energy balance, I think is obviously, well, I know is the most important thing when it comes to people's goals. But then someone will go out and go like, okay, well, the guy did the Twinkie experiment, right? Mm. And I go, okay, so food tolerance is the next most important thing because you don't actually want to eat Twinkies. Like you'll just shit yourself all day.
So would you say food tolerance is the same as food quality in your... Or is that a different part of your pyramid?
No, I actually think it's different. I think food tolerance is more important. I think food quality comes a little bit later, but they are kind of interrelated in a way. But yeah, I think because with food quality, you could say, okay, this bushel of kale is extremely high quality, right? Yep. It's full of vitamins, packed, blah, blah, blah. But depending on who you are, if you eat that, you could actually have an adverse reaction. Mm. You could get bloated, you could feel sick or whatever. And so that's why I think food quality is more general, but food tolerance is more individualized. And I still think individualization in nutrition takes priority over generalization. But the general thing of energy balance is pretty universal. People can't break that law.
That is universal.
Yeah, they can't break that law. Yeah. After food tolerance is macros. Because I'm like, all right, you've got to get food tolerance correct, because if you plug food that you're intolerant into the correct macros, you're going to fuck yourself up. But understanding energy balance before any of this is the most important thing. And then what was so useful about going through that pyramid, and then at the top, you've got like food quality, food timing, supplements, all the stuff that makes no difference, is they ask all the questions. And then once I've explained that, as I go to answer their question, I go, where do you think this fits in the pyramid of importance? And they go, oh yeah, it's a question about, should I take creatine? Because they're all going, oh yeah, I started taking creatine and I got stronger and I had more energy. And I was like, okay, but I got you to sleep more. I got you to increase your protein intake, and I got you to stay hydrated during the day. How much do you think creatine made a difference in all that? And then it's just like pin the tail on the donkey. Okay, put your question in the spot, and they realize all the questions that they asked all went into the top of the pyramid, and they all realized, oh, okay, so the answer to these questions, sure, it's still a good question. You can still answer it, but how important is it? Makes 3% importance. Yeah. And they realized it's a fucking waste of time, these questions, to ask them. And I think that light bulb moment, because I asked them at the end, okay, what's the biggest takeaway from today? I think for all of them, what I started to notice, and this is just, I guess, me getting an accurate reflection of the Gen Pop, is like most of the stuff that I'm thinking about in my head that I think matters doesn't make a difference. And so instead, the questions I need to be asking myself is, how am I balancing my calories throughout the week? Because I like to say one of the things I change my mind on a lot is thinking about calorie intake, weight loss, weight gain, maintenance over a week, over a 7-day cycle as opposed to a 24-hour cycle. How am I managing that overall versus, and then how much protein I'm taking in, and then am I ticking boxes in terms of just like staying hydrated, eating enough vegetables, that sort of stuff. And I think it's beautiful, man. It just simplified it for them. You know, I think the last thing you want to do, anyone that's been coaching for a while or trying to communicate information, is the surest sign of a coach that's unsure about things is they're just stacking loads of information into someone's head. It's going to drown out. The brain can only process so much information. So I tried to just distill it down to one or two things for the people to walk away with. And for most of them, it was like 7-day calorie cycle and getting more protein. That's pretty much it.
Yeah, and I think, you know, sometimes what can be confusing when people like, when you're trying to get this across, or for more general pop, is that even though there's a pyramid, the different levels of the pyramid influence each other. And I think that's sometimes where they can like get tripped up a little bit, because calorie balance at the very bottom. But the things you do above that influence, you know, how likely you are to get your calorie balance right. So what macros you choose can have an influence on your calorie balance, right? Or the food quality, or even the food intolerance. Is like, you know, a lot of the other options you do affect that bottom, most important bottom part of the pyramid. And I feel like sometimes that can leave them a little bit confused. Because like, oh, I just want to do this like one at a time, which is true. Yeah, you often maybe do want to tackle it one at a time like that. But like there is an influence on the other things you do on other parts of the pyramid.
Yeah.
You know, they're not like living in isolation, each one of these things that you can tackle.
Yeah. And you know, what's interesting as well is what I've started to, I guess, put more impact and weight on these days is I guess I never really considered the impact of what I would tell people as sort of an offhand comment could stick with someone for so long until I reversed it on myself. And you know when sometimes someone that you respect or that you know has a lot of knowledge, they make a one-off comment about something that's fairly simple, and to them it's kind of a throwaway comment, but it sticks with you for a long time.
Yeah.
100%. You know, it sticks with you for like years, right? And you like can live by it, right? Yeah. In some instances. That's what I realize is going on a lot with our clients at Creature. And that now I feel if someone comes up or says something that isn't quite right, or I can tell they have a belief here which is wrong and I need to recorrect it, I don't just kind of brush it off. I take the time to find out what that belief is and recorrect it. So for example, I think I was, and this happens a lot because you and I do the sales of new clients, right? Mm. So I was with a new client and they were talking about some of their training and their nutrition and their sleep. And it just came up that they believe that it was better to train early and get their training in than it was, even if it meant that they went to bed at 12 and got up at 4 or whatever, they're getting 4 or 5 hours sleep. And, you know, that sometimes people have such a strong belief about that. They go, nah, it's all right. It's all good. I don't need that much sleep. I found out I can operate pretty well on like 4.5, 5 hours sleep. And the old me, I think, would have heard that and just gone, yeah, okay, we'll probably just get to that later. Mm. Because I felt like if I tackle this now with a few comments and some coaching, it's not really going to make an impact. When you make an impact, it's like when you're sitting down and it's coaching time and your coach is talking to you and you're making a plan. Not really. I think sometimes like just that initial conversation where it's like, hey, actually, you know, all the research tells us that sleep deprivation for 95% of the population is seven hours or less sleep per night. And we've got all the research to show that it's actually really bad. And that self-perception of how well you sleep is basically 100% inaccurate. So people that think they have energy at 5 hours always have less energy than people that have energy at 8 hours. So just small things like that, little things, I feel like have just as big of an impact of like, okay, now is the coaching time. Now you're in the program. Now you're a paying member. This, that, you know, X, Y, Z. I think it's, yeah, the words that we have in that coaching is just, I think, more important than I think I realized in the past.
Yeah, you said that with this friends and family sometimes. They'll be like, you know, asking me, you'd be like, oh, no, like carbs are good. Yeah, 6 months later, you're eating all this stuff. Like, dude, I remember you said carbs are good.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. Yeah.
I'm like, what the fuck are you eating now? I'm like, dude, I've been thinking about it since you said that. Carbs are good, 100%.
Yeah.
They're good.
Yeah, it's good. Do you want some Diet Coke? Do you want all this sugar? Man, I'll tell you what, I put a, mistakenly, I should have read it properly. I was putting through a RecGen order the other day and I was like, I need to get some new RecGen socks, right? And I bought like the quantity was six in the cart. I thought it was six pairs.
Of course.
They're double pairs. That's so, 12 socks. I have many pairs of RecGen socks now. It's out of control. They're like, start giving away for free. But anyway, the reason I'm telling you that is because now I officially have all the RecGen shorts. So they have type 1, type 2, type 2 light or type 1 light, type 3, and some other limited edition type. But anyway, of the four types of shorts, they have like a really loose fitting cotton one as well. I haven't got those. But I was messaging Luke, who's one of the founders of RecGen. I definitely think his best work is the type one. And I tell you what, that's the one with the liner. You know?
That's the one I haven't got. I ordered it.
Yeah. So Lululemon's like made the best shorts, right? Historically today for training. I think any guy that's tried a Lululemon short can like agree hands down. And I still have some Lululemon shorts, honestly, from like 8 or 9 years ago, and they're still awesome. It's no denying the build quality. But one thing that I always avoided at Lululemon was they had the men's shorts with the liner on the inside. And for whatever reason, you know, because Ev, she's like, hey, what, you think they don't have men to test the liner on when they make it? I'm like, I don't know. I'm sure they do, but they just make the most uncomfortable liner. Yeah. Every time they have a liner, I cut it out of the shorts because it just hurts.
Well, I normally just rip through it within the first few weeks.
Or it just squeezes your fucking balls and it hurts. Anyway, so and I was hesitant to get the RecGen liner ones because I'm like, oh, probably won't be that good. But loads of them were sold out. So I was thinking, okay, it's probably worth a try. And I was speaking to Andrew Papp and he's like, nah, I actually really like it. And it's honestly more comfortable, the liner. The liner is like the underpants. It's like the compression shorts within the shorts, right? For people who can't understand what the liner is. It's actually more comfortable, I think, than underpants and shorts over the top. They actually killed it. I couldn't believe it. It's amazing.
Also, you don't wear underpants with it.
No, you just pull the liner straight over. You don't need to. Yeah, it's actually better.
Wow.
I actually think it's more comfortable. However Luke designed that inside bit, he fucking smashed it.
Well,
it's
as long awesome. As if it can solve my chafing when I run, then I'll be sold.
I don't think anything can solve that, bro. I think less squats will solve it. But yeah, anyway, so Rec has, man, as of this coming out, as of Wednesday, they're doing an early Black Friday sale. The entire store is 50% off. The entire store. They're going to sell out of everything. This stuff is so good.
Yeah, and also they don't have that much stock. Like they actually do sell out.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like, oh, we're going to sell out. Like, no, I think they actually sell out. Yeah. It's a smaller company.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It is. So I would say if you're listening to this and you want RecGen stuff, the whole site is 50% off. Now, if you go and you load up your cart and you type in MMP at the end for a discount code, it'll give you a free like sling bag. Oh, cool. Not the big backpack we've got here, but a free extra sling bag. They're all good. You have to do is put the code in. No, you got to add the sling bag to your cart and then add the code in, and that'll be free if you want that. But regardless, you should just go shop there. It's 50% off the whole fucking store. Like,
wow, that is a bargain.
It's amazing. I actually might go just buy more stuff.
When does it start?
It starts on Wednesday. I mean, today's Tuesday, so it starts tomorrow. But if you're listening to this right now, it's definitely started and people are definitely filling up their carts. One thing's for sure, you will lose your size if you don't act fast.
Yes, and color.
Yeah, everything. You'll lose it all. Okay, and you'll be devastated.
Do you want to go to the list of questions?
Let's do it.
We have 7 questions. This person has a seriously fake name. Ray's meme stream. Question for future after show. Have you guys ever done an interview about testosterone replacement? If so, what episode number? We haven't exactly. We have talked about it a few times, though. He goes on, also, what are your thoughts about TRT for middle-aged men with documented low testosterone?
Man, this is a good question.
We have talked about it before, but excellent question.
No, it's let me just get up, because John Berardi put up a really good post about testosterone replacement.
I did see that.
You saw that?
Yeah, one thing I will flag on this as we get into it, which is that I think sometimes, and I think it might be different in America, people have this understanding that like it's really, really easy for people to just go get it when you're older. In America. But anyway, my experience here in Australia is I told my dad about it, and I was like, oh, man, just go get it checked. And he went to a couple of doctors, and everyone just pushed him back. They're like, nah, man, we're not giving you this shit. Like, your testosterone is fine.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's lower than a 25-year-old.
Sure.
But it's not lower than another 60-year-old.
Oh, okay. But in his case, he's healthy.
Yeah, he's healthy.
Yeah.
Yeah, just like a normal 60-plus-year-old.
So you would have to be, regardless of your age category, you would have to be out of the normal range to get it.
Yeah, more for your, maybe not if you're like 80 or something, I'm not sure. But yeah, they're like, you are normal for your age. So we're not pumping you with anything.
Okay, so this is an interesting perspective because typically the only person I've ever heard share their opinion on TRT was Joe Rogan.
Mm.
And all the reasons he obviously gives for it, I'm like in agreement with. I was like, yeah, if I was his age, I'd definitely be on TRT. And to be honest, he's fucking thriving.
Yeah.
And so, well, you don't always know the truth. He did, you know, turn his shit to fucking lava at one point with the carnivore diet, but
he looks good.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a,
he's in shape.
Yeah.
But he's been an athlete his whole life, right? Yes. So you're kind of balancing.
And he still works out a lot.
A lot.
And eats very well.
And has fucking, you know, an ungodly amount of money that he doesn't really have to stress, right?
Yeah.
So, John Berardi, founder of Precision Nutrition, former guest of the show. I don't know what episode it was. He goes, who also looks fucking amazing as well. A few months back, on my 46th birthday, I posted a pic like the one here. And anyway, he goes on to say, like, look, it popped up on all these different forums and stuff. And people were going, oh, trying to debate in the forums if John Brady's on TRT. He goes, let me just answer this.
He certainly looks like it.
Definitely.
I looked it up, I was like, he must be.
He goes, one, I'm not on TRT. And then he said, two, I'm okay with diminishing testosterone. But he actually said, he goes, I have this weird theory that declining testosterone within healthy ranges can help men of a certain age transition into wiser elder roles. Increasing amounts of patience, compassion, and level-headedness, slowness to anger, having a lower competitive drive, having lower aggression. These are the kind of things I want as we raise our 4 children and they take on more coaching and mentorship and spend more time thinking about and serving others. All else being equal, I think lower-ish testosterone might be an advantage here. And then you can read the rest of the post later. So that just kind of gives you what's his thoughts on the inside of his head. And to be honest, I haven't really thought about it from that angle before. And it's hard to say because I'm not at that point in my life, but I can appreciate that getting to that point in your life, you may feel like, especially if you're as healthy as he is, it just may feel very unnecessary. It just may feel like, what would be the point of bringing back the energy of my 20s?
Mm.
I don't want the energy of my 20s. You know, I think maybe we all just assume that we all, at that age, as we get older, we'll just want to recapture our youth, which maybe for a lot of people that is the case, but I don't. Maybe that's a different issue. Maybe that's like them not being satisfied with their life at this point, you know? So, I don't know. Look, TRT, I don't think, I think any time you're going to do any hormone replacement, obviously getting a doctor is number one. So, in that case, getting, you know, medical supervision, I think if you are going to go down that path, is like, it's a thumbs up from me. I think it's fine. You can get doctors to monitor your blood, you can get the right dosage, you can stay in line with all the research and the studies, and you can cycle on and off correctly and all that sort of stuff. I think it's expensive.
Yeah.
I think that's another thing. So it's obviously like a financial commitment.
And it's one that you don't just do for a little bit.
Like you're committed to it.
Yeah, you're committed.
Yeah,
yeah.
You're committed to it.
It's like when you go on those pills that stop your hair falling out.
Right.
Apparently it's like when you stop, it like all falls out. So like once you start, you're not coming off.
Yeah, I don't know if that's true, but if that's the case, yeah, it's fucked. But yeah, I agree. It's like you are definitely making a big commitment. And I think really most people need to ask themselves why. Because if you're generally pretty healthy, and I've had this discussion, I won't name who it is, but someone that's, you know, well-known on the internet, put it that way, used testosterone for a long time, was super jacked, incredible shape, awesome libido, absolute machine, came off it, struggled for 2 years to bring their levels back to normal. For 2 years, being monitored by a doctor, actually got the prescription because their levels were so low and their body was finding it so hard to regenerate testosterone. And this is in their mid to late 20s. They got a prescription to be able to get TRT because the levels were so low. But, you know, did everything, did all the right training, did all the right supplements, sleep, and eventually brought the levels back, but still has the script and still thinking to themselves, do I want to go back there? Do I want to be superhuman again? But then they always get stuck with the question, okay, but why? Why do you want to go back to those levels? If you've worked, if it was so miserable through those 2 years, because, you know, that person went through some depression, they went through some, you know, not suicidal, but, you know, really low points in their life. Yeah, it's a hard thing to bring yourself back out of. Why are you doing it? You know, if you're generally pretty healthy, you know, if you're in shape, if your blood looks good, and what, you know, is it really worth it? You know, it's not to say it always goes wrong, but I think if you were to go on it and then come off again later in life, it's not a thing. You're pretty much committed to it, like you said.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think also, I mean, it's also just not a good thing to do if you're just not overall really healy.
Yeah.
I think a lot of older people, they're like, most people haven't left every stone unturned already, and then let's throw this one in. Like, surely you want to take care of all just like the natural stuff you can do first.
Yeah.
And actually maximize your natural testosterone before you get into something like this, which most people don't even nearly do.
Yeah.
You know, most people are not even close to maximizing their natural testosterone. And yeah, I think Bridie makes a mad point because it's even like, I think I mentioned it once on the show before, but when you, I was reading that when you first become a dad, like your testosterone drops naturally.
Wouldn't that be from the lack of sleep?
No, just like regardless of like your behavior and everything, just naturally your testosterone drops. Okay. And it's like it's to like put you into more of a
empathetic,
caring sort of state. I think also honestly, just to stop you like going and having sex with a different girl,
right?
You know, like whatever when you're like a hunter gatherer, like yeah,
like just, look after this child for a bit. Yeah, yeah.
You've just made one, don't go make another straight away. So yeah, I mean, but it lends itself to what he said, which is like sometimes it's for a reason.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, nature knows what it's doing, right?
Yeah.
But the question begs, if you get to 50 plus, are you getting on TRT?
I think that the thing that would make me do it, and I could very well see myself doing it, would be if I wanted to continue to enjoy like a form of sport or exercise routine for longer, that I felt like I would have trouble maximizing my enjoyment without it. So say, for example, like Joe Rogan, I think he does a lot of martial arts and stuff, right? It probably really supports him to be able to still do it at a level that he really enjoys.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So taking that away...
Because you've got to dial things back a lot, yeah.
Taking that away would be... He would be missing out on, you know, how many more years does he have of being able to enjoy this, right? It's limited.
Yeah.
For all of us, it's limited, but because he's a bit older, it's even more limited. Yeah, man, if it got me some extra years of playing a sport or doing a type of sport at a level that I enjoyed, I would do it.
Yeah.
And I would probably deal with the consequences after that.
Yeah. I think I definitely will. I think, though, I will do it a lot later than when most people start. I think most people generally start at around 50-something. I think I would start at more around, like, mid-60s. Yeah. Because I look at, like, my dad. He's super capable, super healthy. And he's, you know, just a touch over 60. And he's, like, his quality of life is still really good, still really high. Yeah, he's got some arthritis and some other issues there, but that's sort of unrelated to testosterone. But yeah, like I think for what the state I'll be in at that age, I think I'll be pretty fine without it. I think my quality of life will still be really high, I hope. Who knows what could happen. But yeah, if I'm blessed to be in good health at that stage, I don't think I'll feel like I need it. But yeah, I think definitely there's a point at like kind of like mid-60s, like closer to 70.
Just pump it.
Fucking 100%. Just yeah, the fucking biggest fucking amount you can handle. Just get a shrink those testicles in one injection.
Okay, Jonathan Berry. What is the best way to improve your 2K row time? So it's like he's trying to challenge himself.
Become religious.
to enjoy it. His PB is 7.07. So for people that don't know, that is the Concept 2 rower. When it gives you the speed per 500, he is holding 146 on that, like for, on average for the 2 kilometer row. And he wants to get down to 6.30, which I'm telling you is a big challenge from where you're at. No, not that you can't do it, but that's...
What's his stats?
37 seconds. He doesn't say how tall he is and stuff like that.
Okay.
He says no time frame, and he knows it's not going to be quick, which you are correct about.
Yeah. Well, okay, you can probably speak to this more than me because you actually, you know, in a rowing team, even though you're the coxswain. But, I mean, look, to be frank, I think you've probably rowed closer to your body's capacity and stats than I have, I reckon.
Definitely.
Like, for my body type and weight, like, if you look at what people at my body type and weight can row at, I think I'm probably still in the lower average for sure.
If you were in a rowing team, you'd row close to 6 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. But if you were your height and weight when you row, because what was your best time? 6.59 or something?
6.51.
6.51? Yeah. Like, I don't know many people that your height and weight that can row 6.51. Yeah. I should be, because my fastest was 6.30. But you're saying, yeah, I should be more around
six.
Yeah, if I was rowing properly,
you'd be under six.
100%. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I haven't really pushed the potential. I just know it just fucking hurts. Just sucks.
It hurts.
It just sucks so it bad.
Well, what I'll add to this is that I think you can underestimate how much faster you go with rowing when you really start to add up the Ks of rowing. So I've done rowing as part of CrossFit where you row quite a lot, but nothing compared to what you do when you row.
When did you do the 6.51?
Before CrossFit.
Oh, before CrossFit. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, and this is an example of the difference, right? Yeah, okay. I wasn't in the row team, but you know, the rowing times that the people would get rowing was so much better than the times we get at CrossFit. Like,
yeah, what was your best time in CrossFit? Like 7?
6.58.
6.58. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And we did it, like, we kept doing it. I don't know if you remember on TV.
Yeah,
we kept doing it. Kept getting like 6.59, 6.58, 6.59. I just couldn't get any faster, and I was a bit heavier as well. You know, rest assured, like the times that you see the CrossFit Games athletes get on the 2K row is like not very good compared to
terrible.
Like, it's great, you know, for fitness, but it's kind of like comparing, I guess, like their weightlifting numbers to like a full weightlifting.
Yeah, that's what it's like. Yeah. Yeah. There's a couple of people in there who get some okay numbers.
And for a good example is, you know, when we were 15, 16, you know, everyone was like 630s.
Yeah.
Everybody. And it's like, and they were weighing 70 kilos, right? Like, and the number one difference I'll say is that they were just putting in lots of kilometers rowing and lots of easy kilometers rowing. Just like when we had the running expert on the show, 80-20 running.
Yeah.
You know, 80-20 time rowing.
Easy. Sure.
Yeah. Whereas most people, when they're doing CrossFit, you only row hard because you're just not on the rower that much.
Yeah.
Right. You might do like one easy rowing session. But most of the time, it's like rowing in intervals. You go hard and you get off. Maybe in a workout or just hitting some intervals on the rower. Whereas when you row in a team, you just spend lots of time rowing easy, like literally just for transport. Yeah. All right, dude, we've got to get to the race. 25-minute row there.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to like, you know, do a 20-minute of like practicing our drills and then 30 minutes of these drills. And then we're going to do a 20-minute actual work piece.
Yeah.
Then we're going to row home. It's 40 minutes away. So there's just, you know, over the week, you're accumulating hours and hours and hours of just like easy, easy rowing. And by the end of that, you get phenomenally better at rowing very quickly. And I think potentially, I don't know how big you are and how close you are to your potential, but, you know, 7 minutes... The girls at rowing get, you know, faster than seven minutes. So I think you're probably not close to your potential.
Yeah.
You just need to put more time into the rowing machine and follow a program.
Yeah. That's it. Yeah.
Which is hard on Concept 2 because it's boring. but yeah, there's,
yeah, cause
there's
of time those, on the rowing machine. Of those hours you're talking about, in a week of, or say a block of rowing, what is a block? Like 4 weeks, 8 weeks training program? How much of that is on the water and how much of that is on the machine?
In good weather, it's 85% on the water.
Yeah.
It's too boring.
Yeah, no, nah, totally. Yeah, I get it. Yeah, yeah.
And you know, if you can get the people that do well rowing, they have a rower at home. And it's just, they get time in on it, you know?
Yeah.
Okay, Team Rhodes, I have a sleep question. Do you have any great ways to block out noise at night when living in the city?
That is a good question.
Yeah, well, what I've got now, which is I've got a white noise machine. It's not a white noise machine. It's just like a baby camera and it comes with a white noise machine.
Okay, but to be fair, you've never lived in the city.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Yeah, that's what you're saying. I don't live in the CBD.
It's different noise.
I do live on a highway, Pankerville Highway. People go very fast down my street. It's not crazy noise, but I have noticed that it's helped. Like, this is a small anecdote. The rubbish gets picked up on a Wednesday morning. It's very noisy. Always used to wake me up. Now I never hear it.
Well, when I didn't live heart of the city, but I live in Bonner Junction now, which is like a mini city. And then I lived in Redfern, which in a high rise as well, which is also a mini city. like a lot of buses, train stations, like a lot of foot traffic in the mornings and stuff. Honestly, man, it's tough because I get it. It's fucking noisy. if you live in a really good building, it's got way better soundproofing yeah. than an old building. It's probably the first thing. But if you're trying to change the situation you're in now, it's hard. It's hard because there's just this level of ambient noise that you just have to kind of deal with when you live in a city. It's you know how I know it's so different is because every Sunday night I go to my family's place for dinner and they're more of a suburban area. And I'm sitting in the living room and I'm like, what the hell is wrong with this plate? I'm like, there's something wrong here. And I realize it's quiet because I'm so used to the noises of buses, of noise of foot traffic, especially in high-rise apartments, how the noise travels. It kind of travels up almost in like a funnel up the building and enters into your apartment. So you get like all the noise. And when people yell down on the street, it sucks up into your apartment. It sounds really loud, even though it's not that loud. So I'm not a sound engineer, but however that sound travels, it just makes it extra loud in the apartment. It's honestly pretty hard to avoid. Maybe it's get a new door or something. It's tough. It is. You just kind of have to get used to it or move out.
Marley Cockfield, how much muscle mass can I expect to
put Wait, on? Hold on. Sorry. Yeah. You could use earplugs.
Yeah, you could use earplugs. We had them in the past. I never liked them.
They are uncomfortable. Some people do. That could be an option. Yeah.
How much muscle mass can I expect to put on per month as an intermediate lifter? Don't know if this is a guy or a girl. Looks like a guy.
What's the name?
Marley Cockfield.
Marley. Marley is a bit of a unisex name, but it's generally mostly a girl's name. Intermediate lifter. So I guess it depends how you define intermediate, but I would say intermediate is someone that has been lifting for at least 2 years at that point. Yeah. So at that point, if you're 2 years into a journey, I'd say there's still heaps of muscle building potential on the table. I'd say it's not until you kind of reach where you and I are at, where you put over 10 years consistently. When's the last time you took, in the last 10 years, how many weeks have you not lifted a single weight? 7 day period. Not done any resistance training.
I think none.
Yeah, almost none, yeah. Right? Almost none. And I'm the same.
As long as you include like push-ups and body weight.
Yeah. I think it's none. Resistance training, right? Because in those weeks, you might not be creating new muscle, but you're maintaining.
Yeah.
You're sending the signal to maintain muscle. And it shows, right? Like our weight hasn't really gone down in the last 10 years. Not until that point does putting on muscle become like a very difficult process. Like you have to dial a lot of the dials, you know, very accurately. You have heaps of like potential for muscle building. Heaps. At 2 years, I'd barely begun my muscle building journey. And if you use a good program, I don't know, one of our programs or just any well thought out, well rounded program with proper progression and overload in there, heaps of muscle to build. Obviously the calories have to be there, the protein has to be there, the sleep has to be there. But I think if you're not putting on adequate muscle, just at that point, you're probably just not doing a lot of the basic stuff yet. If you're intermediate, you're still very, very early on in your journey. You haven't haven't done long progressive overload cycles. You haven't got anywhere near to your maximal strength on a lot of your lifts. You haven't dialed in a lot of technique on bench press and deadlifts and squats. There's so much you're learning there. Your body, like I just think about, it's like when I watch people do a bench press for the first time or they haven't really put many years on the bench press and I watch them do the empty bar. And I'm like, it looks uncoordinated.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It looks like...
goes down all weird speeds. And
yeah, yeah. Weird speeds, like weird placement and stuff.
Sometimes
like,
hits their chest, sometimes doesn't.
Yeah. It's like their feet aren't really on the ground, pressing to the ground properly. And then I watch myself do the bar. And I honestly think sometimes the bar is like a waste of time. Mm. I'm like, my body's just so used to doing what it needs to do in the bench press that... And I'm not, I wouldn't even say I'm even close to some people that have become like full-time powerlifters, right? Imagine how they feel. They think the bar's a fucking waste of time as well. But it's just so set. Your body knows exactly what to do that because the skill aspect of the lift is so dialed in. You know exactly the tension you need in your lats, in your shoulders, placement, foot position. Like it's so dialed in that you can express so close to your maximal strength. So you got to think at intermediate, you haven't got that for anything. You haven't got that for, you know, I even know like how much tension I need in the first 5 degrees of a bicep curl to know if I'm going to hit the curl properly or if I'm using momentum. Like you get so fine tuned to how well to activate muscles and train your body that you've got immense amounts of progress to make.
The only, the maths part of me will say that I still think you got to work backwards sometimes and do the math. So like at that point, depending if you're a guy or girl, but like 4 kilos of muscle gain in a year is solid, right? That's like...
It's huge. And yeah, steroids
huge,
at that point.
Exactly. Huge gain drive. But I'm thinking, you know, intermediate lifter, maybe it's only the second year of lifting or third year, it's still possible. That still is only 300 grams a month. Because this person asked like how much per month? Like that is a lot. You know, we know it's a lot, but this person might not realize that's a lot.
Mm.
Talking 200 grams a month. Doesn't sound like that much. But yeah, that's heaps. You have to like get
200 gram steak is big.
Yeah, you have to
slap one of those on your chest.
You have to get your expectations, you know, in order. It's nothing like when we talk about weight loss.
No.
And you're like, oh yeah, you know, 1.5, 2 kilos a month, it's good. So, you know, you're progressing. It's like muscle mass is a different story. You know, you often are talking in the grams.
Yeah.
If you're talking in kilos, you're talking about the year, really.
Muscle gain is much more difficult than fat loss, put it out.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. Bubbles, what are some tips for not getting rips or helping them heal, etc., at the gym?
Oh, yeah. Like hand tests?
Yeah, so he's transitioned to the trap bar from a normal bar.
Okay.
And I think it's made it worse.
It's ripped his hands. Okay, so hand care. Number one is when you start to develop calluses from lifting, you need to manage your calluses. Mm. So if you don't manage, and the best way to manage a callus is to get like a hand file or a callus blade and just pick up from like a chemist or a pharmacy and just keep them nice and flat. You don't want to get them off completely because they're a useful adaptation.
Yeah.
They help toughen your hands. But when the callus gets too thick,
And what I'll say in this, we have spent hours talking about our hands.
Oh, yeah.
This is not the first time Lockie and I have talked about hand care.
Yeah.
We've tried a lot of shit.
We've tried it all. Because it matters, right? If you tear your hand and you got workouts to do all week, it's miserable, right? Yeah. Like, you even got that one from the dumbbell. I'm sure it stung last night in the shower, right?
Yes, that was 9 minutes.
Yeah. So when the nodule, like, builds up, that's when it becomes a threat because now it's a kind of a leverage point for your... for basically whatever implement to hold onto and rip off. So that's when it's dangerous. So
when it's too big.
Exactly. So I would make sure that you manage your hand care. And then there's a few different like ointments and like pre-hand preparation stuff that you can do. But I don't rate that stuff that much. Honestly, I don't think it's as necessary. The only thing I think would probably be helpful is some kind of grip or glove can be helpful as well. But it honestly makes gripping harder, I feel like, having gloves.
Oh, yeah. 100% it does. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I agree. I think it's training consistently. So you actually do build up tough hands is a big part of it. And then looking after them consistently, like filing them down so they don't get too big. And then just with the trap bar, sometimes you have to make sure you put your hand in the right place exactly every single time. Because with a deadlift bar, it's fine. But because the weight can shift forward and shift back with a deadlift bar. So with a trap bar. Unless you get your hands like exactly in the right spot, it just destroys your hands.
Yeah.
Because the weight starts falling to the front of the hand or the back
of the hand.
So I would recommend that. And I reckon if your hands get sore, just use straps for a while.
Yeah.
Like it seriously takes the pressure off your hands when you're lifting. Obviously, you don't get the grip benefits, but I remember when we had that deadlift expert on. I went to his seminar. He was saying, and I think it's a good point. He's like, deadlift is not the time to train your grip.
Yeah.
Like, you can do some grip training, but, you know, you're putting very heavy weights through your body. You want to keep your spine in a good position. Like, it's not the time for the bar to be slipping out of your hands as you, like, train your grip. Train your grip some other time so you have a strong grip when you actually hold onto that bar.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Yeah, I would cycle on and off the straps for sure.
Okay, last question. Peter Stroker, how to program running around weightlifting, powerlifting program with the focus more so on improving running. That is a good caveat there.
Mm.
And we've done quite a lot of this, and I think, do we have a running program coming out as a bonus?
Yeah, we're going to be calling it Run Booster, but there is basically a run component, or there's a run cycle built into Project Fitness.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he doesn't sound like he's going to do Project Fitness, but within Project Fitness, they can do that.
Man, what I would say is, I mean, first of all, I think one of the most important things if you're going to put your running around your program is still have a running program. Even if the running program is like a separate program, it's fine.
Yeah.
Right? Get a separate program. I've done this so many times. Get a separate program to go around your general program or your strength training program. When I was training CrossFit and we started including running more seriously into the training program, my coach would just put us on a running training program and that would manage our volume very consistently. So, you know, it'd be like up 10% 1 week and then down 5%, up 10%, 5%, some sort of like progression like that, which was pretty common.
Yeah.
And that was to stop us getting, you know, injured in the actual running. And you know, I'd say if you're putting in running, very often you're like heavier than the average runner.
Yeah.
I would say almost guaranteed probably double the body weight if you live seriously. Average runners are like 50, 60 kilos, man. Like, like real runners are like small.
Yeah, tiny.
Yeah, and you have like massive thighs, huge shoulders. Like it's just a lot more weight going through your body. And maybe your structures are even weaker than those runners for running. So building up really slow, following a really good program, you know, definitely not a program maybe is more built for a runner that has too much volume in there. And then that is going to serve you well. I think that is like more important than than just fitting it in perfectly with your other program, particularly if your focus is running.
Because then you, so what ended up happening with your running shoes? Did you get a running shoe in the end?
What I ended up doing with the running shoes was, and I got this advice from Matt Fitzgerald. I was like, hey, what should I do with running shoes? I'm running barefoot. I'm like really enjoying it, but you know, it does get tough after a while. Just always hammering your feet.
Yeah.
He was like, nah, he's like, if you're going to actually run, like get running shoes.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, did I have to ask that? So I went to Athlete's Foot and they fit, and I went there particular because I knew there was like an owner there that had run the store for 30 years and I hoped he knew something about it.
Mm.
And they're like, yeah, you stand on the platform and then you walk down this thing and they're
isn't
like...
Isn't it all bullshit though?
They're like, I don't know. I actually tried to research it and they look at your feet and then they choose you some shoes. I mean, there's definitely probably a sales aspect here into choosing your shoes that have a good margin for them. I mean,
yeah.
It's a store.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's a thing. But... I do have wider feet and I did feel a lot more comfortable than like most shoes that are like much more narrow for me. So I don't know if it maybe did that. And like there are differences, right? Like my arches probably collapse in a bit more than most people. So something with a bit more arch support is going to be good than someone that has like too much arch. So I think there are some slight differences there. But yeah, I did end up going through the process.
What'd you get?
Oh, it's like, I don't know, like New Balance running shoes.
Oh my God.
They feel amazing.
New Balance. Bro, New Balance. Yeah. I know how I feel about New Balance. But anyway, do you run faster?
I haven't run in them.
Oh, you haven't run in them yet?
Next week, you'll find out.
Okay.
They did feel very good walking around the store.
I'll tell you what, being in a beach town, especially one that's as vain as Bondi, like you do get into running a lot more.
Mm.
Like I've enjoyed it. But yeah, I will say that, volume's the biggest thing. I just got way too excited and I just got, way too into it. But anyway, all right, before we progress on to this Netflix docker, I'm actually... going to let you guys know about a couple things, but next week we're going to actually be reviewing one. I want you to watch a thing, Raph, called Top Boy.
Yep.
Okay. So you're going to work on that for me. That's going to come out next week. So if you are a listener right now and you want something for next week, we're going to be reviewing Top Boy. But anyway, before we get into it, I've actually, speaking of going long amounts of time without doing things and then having done them. This is the longest I have gone, honestly, without drinking whey protein because we put in a late order for True Protein and my gains have been suffering significantly. I ended up on the True Protein website because now that I don't have it, I'm just like on there fantasizing about the products every day. They actually have this new product I found. I hadn't seen it before. It's probably worth trying. Is they have a beetroot powder product now.
Yep.
Yeah,
I've tried it before.
Endurance. How'd it go?
Yeah, it's good.
How's it taste?
No, they've had it for a while.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and I tried it CrossFit workouts. Man, look, if you haven't had beetroot powder before, it tastes like beetroot powder. So it can be a bit rough.
Yeah.
What I'd recommend is having it like not too close to your session so you haven't got the taste in your mouth.
Yeah.
But the science on beetroot powder is it's very effective.
Yeah. But anyway, just if you want their staple products, as always, guys, you know that True is the best manufacturer of supplements. I recommended it to a long-term friend of mine who wanted some supplement advice and he's tried them all. And the first thing he did when he messaged me, he goes, I can't believe how well it mixes in water. He goes, I'm not even going to add milk. And I told you, it's the best stuff. Mm. But if you guys want to pick it up, of course, our code is always MindMuscle10. That's MindMuscle10 at trueprotein.com.au. And that will get you 10% off. Okay, so the Netflix documentary that we are reviewing this week I'm actually surprised that you started...
I watched it.
That you watched it.
Didn't get through the whole thing, but I got through a decent chunk.
Yeah. How far did you get into it?
An hour.
Okay. Yeah, so you got through most of it. Because I brought up the series, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so I started watching the series The In-Betweeners.
Yes.
Which is basically a UK... So this is UK humour, right?
Yeah.
I don't know why I was against UK humour, but...
No, UK, they're very funny.
It's very funny. Yeah. It's hilarious. I laughed significantly harder than I have in any American show for a long time. It's these four blokes that... It's basically what it's like to go through high school, right? You know, as just a young kid. And all the everyone can relate to it in some way, you know, trying to deal with girls and alcohol and parents and driving. Like, they just cover all the stuff so well. But anyway, we watched the Inbetweeners movie, which is, we had to pay for it. So how did you find it? Were you on Stan or some? It wasn't on Netflix.
I watched this one on Netflix.
Yeah. Where they go to Spain? They go to like, yeah. Okay. Is that on Netflix?
Yeah.
Oh, it's there. Okay. My bad. Oh, we watched it on something else. Anyway. So we watched the Inbetweeners movie and it's funny. It's pretty
good. Yeah, man, it's really funny.
I had a few moments there where I had to pause it because I was crying.
Yeah.
I was crying.
No, I agree. I think the moral of the story is I do think British humor is hilarious and potentially funnier than American humor. And I mean, it's a little
Average.
Yeah, it's a little bit maybe dated this movie now, but I think they just nail like, I mean, I did like a, I think you did you do like a schoolies trip when you left school?
Yeah, yeah.
And it definitely, if you've done one of those, like if you're in America, it's like all most Australians go on a schoolies trip where you just like go overseas.
Yeah, once you finish school.
So not schoolies, gap year.
Gap year, yeah.
Yeah, where you take a year off after school and travel Europe. But they basically do the same thing. and I think their attitude towards it is very similar to how mine was as well.
Yeah.
And it's very funny.
It is good. They capture extremely well. Yeah. And it's just a great, you know what it kind of reminded me of, the movie? I'm like, this is kind of like American Pie.
Yes.
That's what it's kind
of like. UK version.
Yeah, UK version American Pie. So both, great movie. I'm going to give it 4.5 out of 5 in terms of comedies. It's just like, it's just so funny.
Yeah.
They just do it so well. There's just so many moments that they capture so well. They just absolutely nail it. And I actually thought it'd be one of those lines like, oh, I reckon the movie will be worse than the series. I think the movie was better than the series. But I feel like you have to watch the series to appreciate the movie.
No, well, I haven't watched the series. Still love the movie.
Oh, you've never watched the movie?
Didn't matter.
Okay. Yeah.
Maybe
yeah.
I would have liked it more.
I think you would have liked it more. Maybe. Because you got so much character development behind it.
Yeah, I'd never seen them before. But
because it's in terms of the timeline, it's sequential. Like, it's correct in the timeline. Right, it's not just they make the series and then the movie's just a random thing in the future. No, this actually follows up perfectly from the end of season 3. That's why it was so good. It's a great movie. What are you going to give it?
Out of 4 out of 5.
Yeah, nice.
Maybe I would have given it higher if I watched the series.
Yeah, absolutely loved it. So watch the series. Easy to watch. It's like 6 episodes a season, like 20 minutes an episode. It's like small time investment. But the Inbetweeners movie. There is 2 actually. One, they go to Australia, but this is not the one where they go to Australia. All right, guys. That is the end of the after show today. Remember, Black Friday sales this weekend from Friday all the way through to Monday. We will have 50% off everything in our store. So that means all the training programs. So if you've been holding out for Project Fitness, Body Strong, the 8-week versions, you can get 50% off those, 50% off the training journals. Is that it, Connor? 50% off everything else? Yeah, whatever's on our site, it's all 50% off.
And this will not happen again, I presume, until next Black Friday.
Yeah, so don't miss that at all. And guys, thank you so much for tuning in. And we'll speak to you all next week. Thank you, Project, for tuning in again to another episode of the My Muscle Project. We release an episode every single Monday. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram, the My Muscle Project, to stay up to date with everything we're doing. And if you have some time, leave us a review and a 5-star rating on iTunes.
And don't forget, we have a second show of the week, The After Show. So it's no longer a rest day on Thursdays. If you have any questions for Lachlan and I for that show, head to themindmuscleproject.com/theaftershow. And if you ask a question, we'll answer it on the show.
Thanks again so much, Project, and we'll see you all next week.